Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's March 13th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, CFTC is considering a rule change that could expand hedge fund investment markets. The old farm bill has been extended to April the 18th. And America's bakers are calling on USDA to open up the CRP and to reevaluate the biofuels mandates. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly, and then we'll hear from Bob Thompson. While we know Congress just extended the old version of the Farm Bill, it seems there is still a very real threat that the 1938-49 legislation could still be put back into place. The ag policy expert will give us the lowdown on what that would mean. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March contract and the nearby wheat down 36 cents at $12.34 a bushel. May futures at $12.44 down 38 and a half, and July at $12.13 and a half, 31 and a half cents lower. March corn futures at $5.59 and three quarters up, 3. May up 2 1/4 at $5.69 and a half, and July at $5.81 and a half, 2 cents higher. December corn, new crop, 4 1/4 cents the gain at $5.83 and 1/4. March soybean futures at $13.87, up 8 cents. May futures up 7 3/4 at $14.02 3/4. July beans at $14.18 3/4, up 8 1/4. November contract at $13.20 and a half, 3 1/4 higher. March bean meal futures at $3.53, up $7.50. The May up $5.50 at $3.56. March bean oil at $62.10, up 0.45. May futures at $62.56, up 0.32. Live cattle futures at the Merck April contract $89.55, down 77.5 cents. June futures at $90.97.5, $1.05 lower. Feeders March at $99.45, down 32.5 for the day. And the April contract at 101.92 and a half, down 77.5 cents. The April lean hog futures at $57.20, down 55 cents, and May hogs down 30 at $68.20 at the Mercantile Exchange on a Thursday afternoon. Taking a look at the outside markets for the day, here's the way the numbers are trading in the crude oil pit at this hour. April contract at $109.70 a barrel, down 22 cents. May futures at $108.75, 18 cents higher. The CRB index at 420.02 is up 2.52, and the dollar at 72.10. That's down 0.19 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 12,148, 37 points higher for the afternoon, and the gold futures are now trading up $13.50 at $992.30 in the nearby March. The April futures at $993.80, up $13.30. This is the way the forecast looks like for the two-state region tonight from our own Mike Sola. He says in the north, skies will be partly cloudy. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers. Lows will range from 30 in northwestern Illinois to 50 in the southern parts of Indiana. Tomorrow, Mike says, in northern and central sections, it'll be partly sunny. In the south, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers. Those will be most numerous in Indiana. Highs tomorrow will range from 44 in northwestern Illinois to 60 in the southern part of Indiana. The extended forecast says flooding concerns will increase early next week, especially in the southern sections of the two-state region, as a storm system could produce widespread rains between 1 and 3 inches, the heaviest rain expected right along the Ohio River. Near-average temps are expected for much of next week. A cooling trend will follow, and the second week of the two-week period will return to below temperatures to the entire area. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
On a Thursday, time to take a look during this closing market report at the futures market with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me about the market and what you see.
Well, I think today's closes, even though they were higher in corn and soybeans, has to be viewed as somewhat disappointing given the early enthusiasm we had, the early strength. So while it's not necessarily bearish, I do think it is indicating that maybe the market is a little tired in here, given the limit moves that we've had here over the past week or so, both limit up and limit down in corn. We've had a couple limit downs, I guess, in soybeans. If you look at open interest levels on corn and soybeans, we've been in a declining mode, and we continue to decline. So it is a liquidation-type market. Now with the March contract maybe going off the board here tomorrow, we'll have to see whether or not open interest might begin to build a little bit. But a declining open interest is kind of telling you that people are cashing in their chips. Either the short says I've had enough margin calls on the upside, or the long is saying I'm happy with my profits, I'm ready to go home. So one thing that you could be attributed that to, I think, is the volatility. A lot of times volatility reduces interest in trading commodities or owning commodities. The other thing is we have a large portion of the open interest held by index funds. They might be taking some profits here before the end of the quarter. And I think also is probably indicating that cash grain is moving into the pipeline. Local elevator facilities have had enough of margin calls and margin risk and has decided to just go ahead and liquidate their cash inventory to reduce margin risk, margin calls, try to bring some of that money home. So I think you've got probably a combination of everything, but when you got declining open interest, that is not necessarily a good sign of continued price strength.
How does the weekly chart look for you at this point with just one day yet to trade?
Well, the corn chart, if we would maintain the gains that we've had so far this week, the corn's going to end up with an outside up week. I'm not real excited about it. I would like to, we'll have to kind of see what happens tomorrow. I would like to see a little more volume, a little more activity to go along with an outside up week. But I guess from a cyclical point of view, that's telling me that corn might be following a seven-week pattern, and if that's the case, then the market ought to be kind of at least find underlying cyclical support over the next 3 weeks or so, or it basically says into the report or the first week or two of April to see how planting begins to get started. Soybeans kind of lost their weekly advance. They're kind of at even money so far. So tomorrow's kind of real critical. If beans don't regain some upside momentum, they could still close lower, and that would continue to indicate that maybe we got some more down in soybeans before the end of the month.
Are you hearing from your sources, and I guess I'm hearing some whispers that, for instance, in the outlying areas, and not particularly far outlying, but Minnesota, Ohio, those sorts of places, that there is a push by seed companies for triple stack to be put in the ground, that there's an awful lot of it around yet?
You can buy about any variety you want on that. I mean, seed corn sales.
But that's not the question I'm asking. It seems to me that what I've heard is that there's an awful lot of corn that might be available, seed corn that might be available. But I don't know that I can actually quantify that.
So what is that? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of corn available. I mean, and that tells you why corn acres are going to be down sharply.
That's what I was asking. So I guess maybe I was asking an obvious question and trying not to ask it quite so obviously. But
yeah, I mean, it's just the opposite of last year. Last year, to find good numbers, popular numbers, were very hard. You had to take maybe a second choice or third choice in some instances. This year, you can still get good numbers. You might not be able to get the hottest of the hot numbers, but I do understand Monsanto has plenty of seed corn available, and if DeKalb's got corn available, then probably your other brands have got a lot available too. Bean seed is the other thing. It's hard to find good quality seed bean. Now, a lot of that could be attributed to poor quality this year because the germination rates are very poor this year. They tell me the only place that you can really find good germination beans is in northern Iowa. Maybe they might have been on the Ring of Fire and caught some rains during August. I can't remember what the weather pattern was, but since we were kind of hot and dry side here and on south, right underneath the high pressure system, maybe that northern Iowa, southern Minnesota did catch some rains, and those the seed quality is much better in northern Iowa. So if you're hunting for seed beans, I guess you got to go in that direction to try to find them. Otherwise, you may have to be take less than the ideal germination rates.
One other question, and this is longer term. Most people have bantered around because this is the number the U.S. Congress has used, but that has been sort of steadfast, that we in this nation could use about 15 billion gallons of ethanol produced from corn. I've heard a number that's a bit bigger than that. When you talk to folks, do you hear anything that's larger than that number?
No. And I've got some graphs, but I don't have them easily accessible at the moment. But I suppose we could probably use that. Whether or not we'll be able to produce that might be another question, depending upon, what size of crop we probably raise this year and whether or not higher prices cut demand in another sector of the feed demand base. So, I mean, that's a, kind of a tough question to kind of answer, in a sense, because you don't know. But I suppose given the movement toward renewable fuels, we could probably use that.
All right. Thanks much. And
very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting is at the Effingham County Farm Bureau in Effingham. The meeting getting underway at 7 o'clock. Panelists for the meeting include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities over in Lafayette, Indiana, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington. That's at the Effingham County Farm Bureau this evening at 7 o'clock. The meeting is free. No advance registration is required. Bring your agricultural marketing questions, and we hope to see you there.
This is Station Manager Jay Pierce. During our Spring Power Hour on April 3rd, we'll challenge listeners to match, in 1 hour, the entire amount of money in our member match fund that we raise between now and then. Please contribute today. Mail your check or give online at willpledge.org.
And for our agricultural listeners, you can simply visit willag.org and hit pledge at the top of the page. Dave Dickey is here now again with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the acting chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission says the CFTC is cautiously examining a proposed rule change that could expand hedge fund investment markets. In Walt Lukin's words, that is something, given the current circumstances, that we are going to be very cautious about and think very hard and long about before we finalize it. Tuesday, Lucan and Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Christopher Cox formalized a memorandum of understanding to share market regulation and oversight. Wednesday evening, Congress extended the 2002 Farm Bill to April 18th, as farm state lawmakers have not come to agreement on how to pay for the five-year, $286 billion program. Farm Bill legislators want to spend about $10 billion over the baseline, but have found offsets for only about $6 billion. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says Congress needs more time. In his words, there is still a considerable amount of work ahead before we can pass a bill. Harkin says payment limits and the issue on whether to cut direct payments to farmers are, quote, totally up in the air. America's bakers lobbied lawmakers in Washington, D.C. yesterday, saying the U.S. is facing a crisis that requires federal intervention. The bakers are calling on USDA to open land in the Conservation Reserve Program, reevaluate policies that encourage production of ethanol feedstocks, and consider the needs of domestic users over foreign markets. But the industry remains cool to using biotech wheat to increase production. American Bakers Association CEO Rob Mackey says, quote, there is a lot of sensitivity to that as to where the consumer is going to be. Meanwhile, Pilgrim's Pride yesterday announced it's closing a complex and six distribution centers in order to curtail losses blamed on record high costs for feed ingredients due to corn-based ethanol and an oversupply of chicken. And the president of Westland Hallmark Meat Company, under subpoena to appear, yesterday acknowledged to Congress that cattle were illegally slaughtered at his plant and that cows too sick to stand were forced into the food supply. But Steve Mendel made the admission only after a congressional panel forced him to watch undercover video of cattle abuse at his plant. In his written statement, Mendel wrote that no ill cows from his plant entered the food supply. Mendel claimed he never saw the undercover video shot by the Humane Society of the U.S., even though it's on its website. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report in Commodity Week. As Dave just reported, Congress has extended the 2002 version of the Farm Bill, that until the 18th of April. But what happens if they do not get that job done? How disruptive would it be if the original 1938 and 49 legislation were to be put back into place? That would happen automatically on April 18th if Congress does not act. Well, ULBI Ag policy expert Bob Thompson says in some cases things would change dramatically, and others, not so much. That original legislation was based on the idea of parity and moving commodity prices to equal in today's dollars the best time farmers could remember in agriculture. It's a period from 1910 to 1914. Here's the U of I's Bob Thompson with the rundown.
The permanent legislation instructs USDA to support the prices of each of the supported commodities at a certain percent of parity. Milk, for example, the price would be supported at a minimum of 75% of parity, or it could go as high as 90%. This would put the USDA in position of offering to buy butter, cheese, and powdered milk at guaranteed prices that would ensure that farmers were getting over $30 per hundredweight for their milk. This would be terribly disruptive to dairy markets because that is so much above what the market is paying, and returns in dairying have not been bad in recent years. Furthermore, our dairy sector has finally been making significant inroads into the export market, helped, of course, by the relative weakness of the U.S. dollar, but also because our agricultural policies put our dairy industry in a much more competitive position. But if we went to supporting the price of milk at 75% of parity, it would completely destroy any hope of exporting product out into the world market. And the USDA would end up owning a lot of butter, cheese, and powdered milk, which they've which would, as I say, completely disrupt the market for those commodities. There was no soybean program in the permanent legislation, so there would be no soybean support program whatsoever, no direct payments, no LDPs, no countercyclical payments, no price support, no nothing. So there are many commodities that were not supported in 1938 and 49 that would lose any programs. Now, the implementing permanent law probably would not be terribly disruptive in the grains and oilseeds because the current market prices are above the level at which USDA would have to support or offer to buy those commodities. But in a few specific cases like dairy, implementing permanent law would be terribly disruptive. But there are a lot of programs that USDA runs whose authority has been passed in legislation since 1948 in these temporary farm bills that happen every 5 or 6 years. And with that, none of those commodities could have any government programs.
That was University of Illinois ag policy expert Bob Thompson with a look at what would happen if the 1938 and 49 farm legislation were to be put back into place on the 18th of April.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Bill Mayer of Roche Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, John now joins us on a Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Todd.
Bill, tell me about how farmers are feeling at this point, whether they think they can actually market next year's crop. I suspect that despite the fact that we've heard about basis-only contracts, it's still possible to get an actual bid.
Oh, yeah. There's still bids out here. There's a lot of talk about that and a lot of concern. But I think that what I've seen is, at least with the customers I deal with, most guys are kind of going at it and saying, I need to talk to my lender. I need to kind of make myself arrangements in case I get into that situation.
Yeah, so the lender needs to understand that it's an offsetting position.
Right. And the crop insurance, of course, is kind of a hot topic here this week as everybody's trying to make their final decisions on that. And, how they make those decisions depends somewhat on how aggressive they probably want to be as far as the cash selling goes.
Yeah, and how aggressive have they been, in your opinion?
Well, I think that most guys have a real good start on marketing for 2008. I think the typical person would be one that started out probably pretty aggressive and then probably slowed down some since those early sales. But I continue to see farmers selling into this market as we get, new highs, as we come in here and make new highs.
And then are your expectations for basis to... I guess I've heard that it's sloppy. Is it, and will it strengthen it over the next couple of weeks or not?
Yeah, basis, especially on the bean side. Now, the Central Illinois processors have, hung in there pretty good on beans, but everybody else is kind of, as the market dropped down there over the Friday and Monday, kind of dropped out of the market a little bit. Corn basis is weaker. I suspect that we're going to see this basis be volatile as we move forward in and out, but kind of continue to strengthen.
Quickly, your bids, please.
Cash corn, 534, new crop, 528, beans, 1338, new crop, 1250.
Right on time. Thanks much, Bill. Bill Mayer is with Roche Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon.
It's National Coconut Torte Day. The torte originated in Linz, Austria, and the recipe dates back to at least 1653. It was Johann Vogel, born in 1796, who eventually began to mass-produce tortes around the world. On this day in agricultural history in 1813, Lorenzo De Monaco was born in Switzerland. A famed restaurateur, in 1851, he joined his uncles in their catering and pastry shop in New York City. He transformed the business into one of the most famous restaurants in the country. DeMonico's was one of the first continuously run restaurants in the U.S. It was the first in the nation with a separate wine list, and famous patrons included Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, Oscar Wilde, and J.P. Morgan. In 1915, Wilbert Robinson, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, attempted to catch a baseball dropped from an airplane, but someone had substituted a grapefruit instead, which virtually exploded in his glove on impact, covering him with grapefruit pulp and juice. And in 2006, Robert C. Baker died at the age of 84. While a poultry and food professor at Cornell University from 1949 to 1989, he developed chicken nuggets, turkey ham, poultry hot dogs, and many other products. He founded Cornell's Institute of Food Science and Marketing in 1970, and in 2004 was inducted into the American Poultry Hall of Fame. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, filling in today for Pete Levitt, who is away. Good afternoon to you, Josh, and thanks taking the time.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Tell me about this nice weather we've had so far.
Yeah, you know, it is. The sunlight is getting longer, and with that switch to daylight savings times, it certainly feels like it in the afternoons and early evenings. And the temperatures are starting to moderate here, and this core of cold air that we've been seeing over the good past of the month to 6 weeks is finally starting to moderate. We still will have a couple more air masses move over the Midwest, and it'll gradually move further and further east over the next 2 weeks through the end of March. However, spring is starting to spring down further south, particularly towards southern Illinois and into the Delta region.
What kind of temps can they expect?
Well, coming up here today, you know, we've got a nice boundary setting up where to hit in the mid-50s here in Chicago and even 70s down south. And that's going to be the trend here over time, where you're going to see this actually pretty strong gradient temperatures between northern Illinois and southern Illinois into the Delta, where 60s, 70s can be seen at times over the next week in the far southern regions. And 55 here in Chicago this afternoon, that's probably the warmest we're going to see here over the next week.
And what kind of conditions might they have? They should be getting into their growing season, planting season here pretty shortly. What kind of conditions do they have in the Delta?
Yeah, and down in the Delta, it's the fact that we've been cool through the better half of March, and you still get a couple more cold waves coming through, although not as intense as we've seen. Versus a year ago when conditions were much warmer and things got in a lot earlier, things are going to feel like they're delayed this year. However, by the end of March and in the first couple days of April, things should be able to rapidly start ratcheting up as the cold air shifts off to the east, and then even this wet pattern that we've been entrenched with over the winter starts to wane a little bit, and we become a little less active on the precip front.
South of here, harvest is in full swing in Brazil and Argentina. Tell me about those areas.
Yeah, the harvest is actually going at seasonable levels across Brazil and Argentina, and particularly across Argentina, things look very steady for a good harvest progress at this point. There is a little window here Sunday to Tuesday across Argentina when we'll have a frontal boundary cross the region, and that may cause some minor delays, but overall things are in good pace, although they are a little bit behind last year's pace in Brazil where you had abnormally good conditions.
And then if you can maybe take a look at China and tell me how they're setting up for their planting season, please.
Yeah, China's in good shape. The temperatures are running above normal here. So from a wheat perspective, things are coming out of dormancy early and seasonable precip over the winter, particularly down south across the Yangtze River Valley, between the Yellow and Yangtze River Valleys. Things are in fine shape there. Far northeastern regions has been dry so far, but it's been seasonally dry, and we see that changing over the next 10 days when we have a disturbance moving across the Yellow River Basin, and we'll boost soil moistures across that region.
Does that get it all, or is there anything else we should discuss before I let you go?
Europe is turning colder, so any early season planting and field work will probably be delayed in Europe. That's the cold sector across the globe as we get into late March.
Josh, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy. Somebody from that office joins us normally on Mondays. Pete Levitt was today away, gave us a little call ahead of time, so Josh agreed to join us this afternoon. We thank him much for doing that. Right here for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, please visit our website to listen again if you'd like. You can do that as an MP3 file or simply sign up for our podcast. It's all at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.